This is for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson, and this is For The Players, the pop culturist PlayStation podcast that over 40 years of playing PlayStation and 8-plus years in that games media combined, we thought we'd throw a hat into the ring and join that PlayStation conversation. That conversation happens every Monday morning at 9 a.m. on YouTube and 8 a.m. on all the podcast services, and you can have that conversation and take the next step if you head to our social medias, like our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/thepopculturist. Links to the others are in the description below. If you want to show the love of Pop Culturist on your body, head to thepopculturist.com/shop, where you can buy shirts, not like this, not wearing one today, by phone covers though, which is pretty cool. And if you want to throw a couple of dollars our way, head over to patreon.com/popculturist, where you can normally find a tier that interests you, and you can watch us record this live. However, as you may have known, this isn't a Monday, it's Tuesday when you're seeing this, because of PAX we threw it back a day. We'll get to that in a second. But joining me in the place of Josh Saunders this week is Joel Grelton from Any Game. How are you, man?
Good, man. Thanks for having me.
No worries, man. You're in my house. You're staying here for PAX. I'd be a bit rude of me if I'm like, hey, Joel, can you like fuck off for a little while I have someone else come in?
Well, I know how hard it is for you to do solo shows.
So. Oh, yeah. What is it? And clearly, I take about an hour and a half, which is... Apparently, Josh is here just to edit me.
Yeah, he is.
I've come to learn. Like, I was like, I'm just going to go gangbusters. And I did. And I regret it because that was a long... ass show, but it's already been a long ass morning. It's this evening. It's been 15 minutes, and we've just started. There's been like multiple attempts because I just can't nail that flow without Josh.
Yeah, and I got the giggles, and I think this one's good though.
I tried to poke him on the hat, and that seemed to maybe have worked. But those who don't know, what is it that you do, man? You have been on here before, but you may
have... I have been on here before, and in our little circle of group, our friends, they all know. But if you don't know, I found it anygame.com. Links to that might be in the description, or if you want to edit...
I'm incredibly inconsistent,
cool,
so maybe.
We'll see. Specializing just in the written word, and do a little bit of YouTube stuff, but primarily the written word, spreading the news and reviews for video games and anime.
So all your games do tend to have that anime focus as well.
Not exclusively, but
you'll tackle some that kind of merge the two.
Yes, definitely.
Which is something that we don't do here. So there you go.
Bandai Namco love.
Yes, that's indeed. So you have been down in Melbourne for PAX Australia 2018.
I have, yeah.
Now we're going to talk about that just now.
Yep.
Because that's the main part of the
show.
We'll
get to that.
Outside of PAX, what have you been playing?
Over the last week, I can say now, I've been playing, if you are a fan of anime, the My Hero Academia game, One's Justice. It's a fighter game. The full review will be going up on the site sometime this week, but it's average. It's not awful, it's not bad. It's
very nice.
It's average.
I tend to find that, it's personally with some Japanese games, either they're stellar,
yep,
or they're just straight in the middle.
Yeah, it's the first game. It's a very, very popular anime series at the moment. It's probably
Which one is it?
It's called My Hero Academia.
I've heard about that the other day. It seems to be blowing up my Facebook.
Yeah, it's... I don't know if they rushed the game or what. It just doesn't have that extra edge that some of the others have. That not that same kind of love and polish that they'd put into, say, Dragon Ball or anything just yet. I think they're still finding their feet of what the best kind of way to do a game in that series is, because it's kind of like... anime school kids X-Men. Every kid has a different quirk.
That sounds actually kind of really cool.
Yeah. So
I was going to really say, cool, does it kind of have the feel of the show at least?
The story mode of it follows certain chapters of the show, and it has everyone's favorite characters and things like that are available as fighters, but it turns what is a really big and grand story into a brawler.
Yeah. So adds a bit of a bummer.
Yeah. But I'm sure they'll find their feet maybe with the next game or the game after that. You look at Dragon Ball or Naruto, they've got, 30, 40 games or something between them. And some of them are really, really average, and some of them are incredible. So Fingers crossed for the next one.
Anything else we'll be jumping in?
No, I didn't even bring my Switch down with me. No, I haven't been jumping to a hole. I've still been chipping away at Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
How you finding that one?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah,
more than I thought I would. I'm not super into the Spartans and that kind of lore. I was more into more excited for Origins because I'm an Egypty kind of lore person. But after booting up Odyssey, I like it.
As I mentioned before, like Egyptian mythology is dope, and I love it a lot. However, I had more of a fun gameplay wise in Odyssey.
Well, I decided to play through it as Cassandra, I think it is, the female protagonist.
Yeah, I played Alexios.
Just to play something different. And liking it.
Very nice. What have I been playing? WWE 2K19, as always. I was playing that before PAX. What else have I been playing? Oh, a lot of Call of Duty.
Mm.
Played Call of Duty Blackout with good friends Dash and Buddy.
I know
Dash Culture.
Guys.
And Dylan from Explosion Network. We had a couple of rounds. I think it was the Wednesday before PAX.
Mm-hmm.
My first win. And thankfully, I was expecting for me to die early on and then just to like have them carry me to the win. They did carry me to the win, but it was only about 2 minutes. Not even. Like, as in, we were in the final circle and then some squad rolled us. Dash and I dropped. We got wrecked. And then Dylan came around the back. Buddy went over the top. So Brady brought them over. Dylan took them out. It was beautiful. And we got that sweet
Dash
win.
Watched from behind a tree? Or
No, Dash was dead too. Dash and I ran around the side, got wrecked, and Buddy went over the top. And we're playing to the flanks.
So out of the four of you, who was the team captain, the MVP?
The MVP, I think, was Dylan. Dylan got a lot of kills. He's quite good at the blackout mode.
There you go, Dylan. Explosion Network plug.
That's it. And we have both spent about an hour-ish, not even, with Red Dead Redemption 2.
It's been a busy weekend.
Yeah, so it did drop on the Friday of PAX. We didn't come, so we stayed in the city the Friday night. Saturday night we came home and went, and fell asleep, and then left. Came and then went, did more packs, came home Sunday, laid down, and then Monday I worked, you stayed here, you did a bunch of your work.
Yep.
And then we're here right now. So we've only got to spend about an hour with the game, so there's not a lot we can say. You can sort of very vague first impressions. Looks fucking awesome. Yep.
It does look visually incredible.
I liked a lot of the, it's a little subtle thing, but all the cinematics are in a widescreen format. It drops down to almost, because it is obviously already runs at 16:9. I think it runs down to just a standard widescreen. I don't think it's quite as thin as the Hateful Eight, but I'm getting a lot of Hateful Eight vibes from it,
yeah,
which is really cool.
Kind of reminds me, not as deep, like you were saying, if you've ever played The Evil Within, that Bethesda game from a couple of years back, it kind of copped flack from people because the whole game was that thin.
Yeah, apparently that was a frame rate fix.
Yeah. Who knows?
But yeah, so we had I've had a little bit of bug, a little bit of bugs. It was nothing too major, but
from the little bits that we played, I do like the little details, and it seems pretty polished. So looking forward to spending some more time with it. But as some people did it's been fully spoken about on the internet. It does start a little slow. It's a bit of a cold opening. You don't really know what's going on.
We're still kind of in the snow.
And one thing I do like as well is the snow tracks you draw.
Yeah.
They're not just a predetermined groove in the texture that just pops in. It kind of does follow relatively close to where you're walking and things like that. It's just little things. But I'm looking forward to putting a fair bit more time into that one.
Yeah. And tomorrow night I will be streaming Paw Patrol on a roll. Thank you very much to the team over there at
Bandai Namco.
Bandai Namco, I was going to say Square, but no, it's Team of Bandai Namco. So thank you very much, Steven, for sending the code my way. Hopefully you make my son and myself very happy. We'll boot that up tomorrow in the streams. Now that ruins my segue, because the first bit of news we have for the news section is about Red Dead Redemption, and that section is called Inform the Players, where we tell you about the PlayStation news that happened this week. Now, obviously, with PAX, there's not, there's, you know, that doesn't really stop the world news, so a lot still happens. Mm. but it's also a kind of small stuff too. Kicking things off, as I mentioned, is Red Dead. Red Dead Redemption 2 is one of the one of those juggernaut blockbusters that appeals to all players, regardless of a console's audience. So Sony will be delighted with the performances of the game on its console. A very impressive 68% of the sequel's UK retail sales were made on the PS4, which is a huge split when you consider the Xbox One is much more of a factor on the shores of the UK compared to the rest of Europe. Red Dead Redemption 2 could only manage 27% of GTA 5's first week total, however, but the digital sales share was much smaller in 2013. And the latter game had an extra 3 days to rack up into its unholy total. So it did launch on the Tuesday, where Red Dead launched on the Friday. Rockstar's latest did more than double its 2010 predecessor's debut, however, and again, it's worth reiterating that this is without digital taken into account. It is the third fastest-selling game of the generation in Britain, and that's obviously not including any of the FIFA games. That's mad.
But yeah, I'm assuming their week cutoff, what, is Friday or the Sunday? Or
I assume it's the Saturday, or potentially
because they're talking close first week sales, and the game's been out 3 days now.
Yeah, I have a feeling this is the Friday. I think it's Sunday to Friday. It makes sense.
Realistically, it's 1 day stats.
Yeah, which is fine. As I mentioned, like it trailed compared to GTA 5, but this is only physical numbers. I know a lot of people that have been, well, maybe not in the UK at least, but at least in Australia, that went digitally knowing that it was going to be huge and they could preload it. Mm-hmm. So that was the big thing for them. And the digital movement is here. It is coming.
Yes.
However, I'm not surprised.
No.
You know, we have been given some information from a friend of ours who does work in a games retail company here in Australia, and they have mentioned that the amount of copies ordered were 3-1.
Yeah.
So the total for the company total they ordered, I think, was 100-something thousand PS4 copies of Red Dead and about 30,000 Xbox copies.
I'm interested to see in the coming weeks, though, if there's a shift in that ratio. I'm not sure if you saw today online Brian Altano of IGN and a number of others are saying that after playing both, the game runs and looks much better on the Xbox.
Yeah,
the One X.
Yeah, sorry. Digital Foundry has come out and they have said that it does run better on the One X, which is to be expected. That like this is something I was having a discussion with a buddy of mine at work today, was that the Xbox One is far superior console because it had a year on, like in terms of hardware at least. Mm. Like it had a year later, so it's got a year younger tech in it, which is only even an advantage. But with PS5 around the corner, who knows? Now, of course, there's nothing else we can say about Red Dead
because
it's, you know, 45 minutes in the game. The Fallout 76 beta is finally coming to PS4 this week, and here are the dates and times to enter West Virginia. And now I'm going to read them all out, even though as the day this goes up is the 30th, so you may have missed a couple already. So there was one on October 28th, there was one on October 29th, and I should mention these are all in Australian times. So on October 31st, that is 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Friday, November 2nd, 5 a.m. to 10 a.m., Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Sunday, 8 a.m. to 12 p.m., Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time.
That's a big one.
And November 5, which is the Monday, 5 a.m. to 12 p.m. AEDT. The beta, however, will have an impressive 95.581 gigabytes. Well, it did for me anyway. And Bethesda had mentioned previously it would be around 45 gig, which I have seen on PC. However,
we saw firsthand it's
my
95.
First hand it was 95. And I know that you're jumping on the Fallout 76 beta as well. Which one works best for you, man? Where are you jumping in?
We might get a little bit in on the 31st, but otherwise it'll probably be the weekend or the Monday session.
Mm.
But some point I'll be jumping in.
Yeah, so I'm in the same, but I'm thinking potentially, like I can't do tomorrow, Wednesday, because that would be
a work day,
and my boss is fantastic. He is out of the office, but I don't think I'll be able to get away with playing it in that time. So I'm thinking probably the Sunday morning, and with November 6th being my birthday and Melbourne Cup Day, I do get the Monday off with my workplace. So I'm happy. I think I might get up. So I'm going to be streaming these, so I'll probably stream the Sunday morning and maybe the Monday morning as well, just to get as much as I can out of that Fallout 76 beta.
It's November 6th is my birthday. Melbourne Cup, isn't it?
Yes, correct.
There's no beta that day.
As I said, it's on the Monday. I get the Monday off as well because the public holiday. Gotcha. So, deep cut. In Geelong, we have Geelong Cup.
Yep.
And a lot of businesses either have Geelong Cup off or Melbourne Cup. My business is like, yeah, you work Geelong Cup, you get Melbourne Cup day off, and we'll give you the Monday.
I'm nice. Like,
sweet. So no complaints there from me. So even though Bethesda had a massive presence at this week at PAX, and we did they swing did. By Bethesda Shindig on the Thursday, thank you very much to the team over there at Bethesda, especially Johnny, the lone Vault Wanderer, for hooking both us up with invites.
Very handsome man too.
Oh, he's a very kind of handsome man. But yeah, so we didn't. This wasn't there. It wasn't playable, which is a real shock to me.
No, but as from what I gathered from speaking to a few of them, in their minds, the game's kind of out. It's out in the wild. The beta is the full thing. Progress will carry over. Didn't really need to market or push it too much at PAX.
Mm.
With the beta freely available, I suppose it'd be almost a waste of time lining up to play it at PAX.
The biggest problem for this would have been the select times the beta is open. Like, yeah. They wouldn't have had the whole, you know, the times wouldn't have lined up looking at, you know, seeing how it's in the weird times of the morning. And I don't think they would be set up a local server or anything.
No, they'd need to have like a offline vertical slice of the game, which is completely irrelevant to what the actual game is.
Yeah,
and then it would need to refresh
and forget all data. So, and
they were kind of big there pushing Rage and Quake. That seemed to be their focus. Mm. So
I'm a little bummed that I couldn't play it, but then as we just discussed, my brain's gone, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I just noticed we're both wearing Yakujima production shirts today.
Twinning.
That's right. These are largely picked up from the PAX 4. Next up, Medieval. Since the announcement of Medieval on PS4 at last year's PSX, it hasn't been entirely clear whether Sir Daniel's revamped adventure would be a simple remaster or a full-blown remake. It's also been a year since we've heard anything concrete about the project, and with only a brief teaser trailer to go on, fans of the series have been left wondering exactly what to expect. Thankfully, the PlayStation top brass Sean Layden has clarified this when he dropped into the latest episode of the PlayStation blogcast. After confirming a new trailer will land rather aptly on the 31st of October, so that's within the next couple of days. Good timing.
Yeah.
He recognized that there had been some confusion as to what the PS4 game will be. In short, it's a full-scale remake. Quote, there have been some words that might sound alike but mean different things, like remake and remaster. This is a remake, he confirms. Sony is working with a studio called Other Ocean Interactive, providing design details and assets from the original PS1 game in order to bring it back to life on modern tech. It also sounds like the voice of Sir Dan will indeed be making a return, as Layden also states Sony is bringing back some of the folks who originally worked on the PlayStation 1 Classic.
It's a good thing for all of you that are fans of Medieval, I suppose.
Are you a fan of Medieval?
My experience with Medieval is limited to the same two levels over and over and over again that were included on the PlayStation demo disc.
Me too! I'm pretty sure I have it on the Vita. I can put it as PlayStation Classic. But my distinct memories of it are just destroying that demo disc just over and over and over again.
They were great.
What else was on there? Tekken 3, Cooler World.
I think they had a Rugrats. I think it might have been on there, possibly.
Because I remember there being four titles. With the demo one disc and it had... Yeah.
Oh, I had a book of demo discs.
Ooh, aren't you fancy pants?
It was... But I know Medieval was definitely on one of them, and but that's good to see that this one's kind of getting the extra bit of love.
Yeah, that
the
was
same kind of vein to,
excuse me,
like Crash Bandicoot last year, Spyro getting this year. It's a full blown remake.
So. Yeah, it's good to see that because Medieval is certainly a second tier PlayStation classic. Like, it's not your Spyro or your Crash. Like, it certainly holds strong in a lot of people's hearts. But I think this is probably the an unexpected way. I was expecting them to do some sort of like rework a little bit, kind of in the same vein that they've done with like Loco Roco and the new Castlevania, as we mentioned last week.
Parappa the Rapper.
And Parappa, like, but they've gone in the right place here, which is good.
The thing I'm thinking is, I thought with the Crash Bandicoot remake, especially in the Spyro, they were kind of putting the feelers out to see if there's still an audience there for it. And this seemed like a weird one to put the effort into for a full-blown remake. Are they trying to bring it back or want to bring it back and just putting those feelers out again? Or
yeah.
Or what? Because I'm sure we're going to get a new Crash Bandicoot probably within the next few years from someone.
Maybe it's based on how maybe it's a more like a business risk in the vein that, like, look, we know we've laid the groundwork with your Crash Bandicoots, with your Spyro. We know that there is a desire. We know there is an appetite for PlayStation 1 classics coming back. So maybe they're like, well, let's try something a little bit lower tier, and that way, rather than relying on just the huge market nostalgia, what can this do? Because if this goes well,
give them wider data.
Yeah, then they could sort of head into like Legacy of Kane and like all these other. I don't know. That's like the shit. Like
Soul Reaver.
For the random people, they may not know this, so they're testing the potential, the highest, and the like. So essentially, min and max almost.
Yeah.
Like, what's the range that we can get out of a remake? That's how I see them going anyway.
Business data.
Yeah, the business of games. The fucking most exciting part of games. As we mentioned last week, or the week before, with PSN name changes, there's some more details have come out. Sony has been sending beta code to the new PlayStation 4 firmware update, which allows you to change your username. There are a few disclaimers before you go in, however. Although, they're freaking terrifying, to say the least. Now, I should also mention all these articles today have come from Push Square. We were pressed for time, so I just straight up pulled them. Normally, I try to reword them, but today we're just straight up ripping them. So we ain't no Philip Mewson, all right? the platform holder warns that you, quote, may lose access to content you've purchased for games, like add-ons and virtual currency. It also warns of potential lost progress, leadership data, and progress towards trophies.
Scary.
There are a few things worth pointing out here. This is a disclaimer, and it's a company's effectively covering its ass should anything go wrong. Remember, we are in beta territory here, so the organization's going to want to know about any hiccup and bug. From what we've seen online and around social media, those brave souls who have changed their names haven't had too much trouble yet. So the warning is potentially scarier than the reality. It's also worth pointing out that there's no mention of you having to wholesale, quote, give up access to any games, saves, or trophies prior to the PS4. Which wasn't a rumor alluded to earlier, as one insider claimed ahead of all this being announced. The language is very clear that this may affect in-game currency like FIFA points, for example, or progress towards particular trophies, but you're not going to lose access to titles that you've purchased or suddenly have trinkets wiped from your account.
And I think that's why they've started it in beta territory, because there's a lot of maze that are being thrown around here. So they don't even know what's going to break. We all know that the PSN, especially from the PS3 era, is held together with Band-Aids. And
my nose has been shit.
Having a little bit of an asthma attack.
Yeah, no. My allergies. I ran out of my nasal spray today, so it's just a fucking mess in my face.
So yeah, I think I was talking to, I believe it was Paul, in between the...
Is that Paul from player2.net.au?
In between appointments at PAX and running around. And yeah, there seems to be a lot of maze that are being thrown around with this name change thing, and what will break, what can break, and not a lot of definites from Sony just yet as to what it will lock you out from. And it's a bit of at your own risk.
Yeah, well, when you're working with millions and millions of potential users, like, it kind of makes sense to throw up those maze, because there may be something that your account's connected to that mine isn't. Mm-hmm. And with PSN, they haven't been able to pull it down. Like, even just to kind of put it down for a day, test some things, put it back up. They're not able to. This has to be an ongoing live service so that they can't have those maintenance periods.
Remember that time it went down for like 4 weeks?
Yeah, that was that was worse. But I did get Infamous out of it, and that worked out
well. Yeah, me too.
Now, we mentioned this before, so I'm not changing my name. Will you change yours?
No, I'm happy.
What's your name currently on the PSN?
It's Reaper_Joel, which leads back to like an online name that I had back in the mid-2000s, and I'm just too scared to change it, I think, at the moment.
So you have no desire... outside of the potential risks?
I'll say the
risks,
desire might be there, as long as those risks are definitely out in the open. Mm. Or I've heard from at least people in our friend's circle or people I can trust that say, no, there's nothing that would...
People in the know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all right. But... yeah, let's keep swinging on forward. Marvel Spider-Man smashed records during its launch month in the US, with the NPD Group reporting that the exclusive secured the highest launch month dollar sales for a PlayStation exclusive of all time. The title also enjoyed the seventh largest debut of any PlayStation release ever, and is the third best-selling title of the year so far. And yes, that includes multi-format games. In fact, the MPD's Matt Pistacella shared the following staggering statistic. Marvel's Spider-Man achieved launch month sales 37% higher than the combined launch month sales of all other Spider-Man games released since the NPD Group began tracking in 1995.
Wow, well done.
Holy shit. Like, I knew Spider-Man would do well because it's Spider-Man. Like, the big advantage of it, you know, this is a known character. This is a known commodity. It can only go well. This well, didn't expect to go this well.
Well, it was good as... like they were saying as well, another thing that helped it get up to that is they trusted a licensed property with an actual real game developer.
Mm.
It wasn't just a thing that was... a lot of Spider-Man games in the past have been like movie tie-ins and things like that developed in 8 months.
Mm.
Like there was a lot of extra love.
There was a period of time where it hung out with Beenox and they did... They spent some time on it and I think they tried to do their best... but they were always still technically a double A studio. So compared to the likes of Insomniac, like it they've been able to go above and beyond.
So Sony's got the money to be able to tell them to take your time with it. Disney have got even more money to be like, take your time with it. And it's just another accolade for Disney, I suppose.
That's it. And it's a huge thing for Sony to be able to hang their hat on.
Yep.
And as some quick fire news as we start wrapping up the news. Little Big Planet turned 10 this week. Well done, Little Big Planet. Spyro Reignited Trilogy is rumored to be hitting multiple discs. Mm. The Borderlands Twitter account hints that the Borderlands VR will not include any of the DLC. Officially branded PlayStation furniture exists.
It's really schmick.
It's in the US. It's from Pottery Barn and includes a lounge table, a TV unit, a beanbag, and lovely wall-mounted case display units.
A little pricey, but they look awesome.
Look rad. I'd buy them in a heartbeat if they were in Australia. Like, you got no idea. I had to deck the fuck out of this room. And finally, this one I did for you because I need you to explain what the hell it is. Jump Force hits shelves on February 15, 2019. How's Jump Force?
Sure does. What is it?
Yeah. I saw it at E3 and I'm like, I don't know what that is. I saw Goku, I saw a dude with a hat.
Yeah, so Shonen Jump's like magazine out there. It's some of them are weekly, monthly. It's kind of like their Marvel. It's their... title thing. And they're in their magazine, they've published throughout the years Dragon Ball, they've got your Yu-Gi-Oh, mm-hmm. like mangas we're talking. Yu-Gi-Oh's, your Bleach, Naruto, all your big kind of shonen anime. That's why they've got that name attached to them. Typically your battle anime, your long-running ones that go multiple hundreds of episodes. And this is a fighting game that they've made, and it's using, I believe they said, fighters from over 50 of their series.
Jesus Christ.
From the past. I think it's been going 30 years or so now, so... yeah, you've got your Gokus versus your Freezers versus your Yu-Gi-Ohs versus your Light from Death Note versus your... yeah, it's...
would it have the One it Punch could be a Man.
It could. I believe he is. It could be a jumbled mess, but from what I see and have heard about people that have played it, said it's pretty solid.
Yeah, it seems to be a big manga, anime melting pot. Like anyone that you give a shit about, probably going to be in there. It's
probably going to be in there, or at least have someone from that series in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rad. I'm not going to play it, but you will, and we'll review it.
Comes out
fanaticgame.com. Dot au?
Plug. No, just .com.
Yeah, screw AUs. And wrapping things up is the top selling game for the week ending October 21st. Do you want to do the sweet hands? I normally, you know how I normally do the counting? You can be the man. And number 10, Grand Theft Auto 5. Number 9, Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Number 8, WWE 2K19. Number 7, NBA 2K19. Number 6, Soul Calibur 6. Number 5 is Lego DC Villains. Number 4 is Marvel's Spider-Man. Number 3, FIFA 19. Number 2, Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And of course, number uno, Call of Duty Black Ops 4.
Is that 2 weeks now?
2 weeks. It'll be there forever. It'll be there for until the next one comes out.
Not number one.
Not number one. It'll do well for the rest of the year. Yeah, but with Red Dead coming out, obviously going to knock it off gonna number one. One thing we discussed earlier, it'd be really interesting to see whether Grand Theft Auto sticks around in the top 10. Because it's been in the top 10.
Pretty staple in that top 10. Pretty consistently. It is number 10 this week. So we'll see if it bumps or if people jump back on it.
Well, yeah, it's one of those things, right? People might... maybe some sales on. No, they got the new game. Like, well, some people may not be able to afford Red Dead, but they might
want that Rockstar kind of.
Yeah, they might be able to pick up a cheap GTA.
Yeah.
Who knows? But that's all done and dusted, and it's now time to chat to the players in a section we call Chat to the Players. And this week we are chatting about PAX Australia. 2018. So this weekend we did have PAX Australia. It is essentially PAX in Australia. The big difference this year is they did bring over EB Expo, a previous expo created and ran by EB Games, which is our version of GameStop. And whoever that they sort of mushed together.
Yeah, kind of absorbed each other.
To create literally the biggest gaming expo in the Southern Hemisphere. Now, a lot went down.
Did.
Busy weekend. We were there, it's all days, including the night before. The big push this year was Bethesda. Bethesda had a lot of time here. They had they brought in probably the biggest external devs. They brought easily. Your two guys, which were?
Matt Fyrall from Elder Scrolls Online. He was the game director on that. And Tim Willits, studio director at id.
And of
id
course, Software.
Pete Hines himself.
So that's a pretty massive turnout for three big devs. Like, that's the one thing that PAX Australia always is missing for me is the big international pool. Like, they always have one staple dude. Like, they had Phil Spencer a couple of years ago.
Last year was Bernie from Rooster Teeth.
Bernie Burns. I mean, that's a bit of a cop out.
Doesn't do anything for me, but I know a lot of people are Bernie fans. But
like last year or even this year, if they were to bring like Corey Barlog or something, I would piss my pants.
Yeah.
You mean like stuff like that? Like, that's where it would be impressive. However, when they went, we've got Pete Hines and the dudes you've seen on stage at E3 talking about Elder Scrolls, talking about like Doom and these guys. It's awesome.
So overseas, no work got done on Bethesda games last week. All the bosses were out and they just partied.
And as we can verify that, this is the Bethesda shindig and there was some drinking.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Drinking. Just a little.
But yeah, so what we're going to talk about now is it's a big hunk of games that we played, the games that we got hands on with. Now, we are going to focus primarily on any of the main publishers, the main developers, because indies are great and all, and indies are fantastic, and PAX is an exceptional place to support those. But many, many of you, particularly some of our audience outside of Australia, may not care because a lot of them are Australian made. And to be honest, the bigger games are a lot more fun for us, and they're good to make content out of. I'll let you run this one. I'll let you take the because we played pretty much everything the same.
We did, bar number one. So we'll get that one out of the way. The very first thing. So we got to go in a little bit earlier this year as beautiful media
access.
And the first thing I made my beeline for was Kingdom Hearts 3 over at Square Enix or Bandai Namco are publishing it out here, but. Yeah, so it was good to finally get hands-on after waiting 13 years for that.
Mm.
Since the last mainline entry in the game.
Because you are also a big fan of Kingdom Hearts, yeah?
Massive.
So, was it good? Did it fit that expectation? Did it feel like Kingdom Hearts?
It felt like what Kingdom Hearts should be now, in a modern era. So, it had everything that I loved about it. It had the same feel, the same charm that the Disney kind of characters throw into everything, but like things like the particle effects and the character models and just the way things sound and move and every, and the size and scale of the levels they can do now is because of 2018 technology. So took everything we loved about the games of the past and have really brought it into modern age. So really looking forward to that one.
Speaking of everything that I love, I did have Toy Story. You played the Toy Story
I played demo. The Toy Story demo.
And how was it? Did it feel like Toy Story?
It did. One thing I did notice, though, is I'm pretty sure it's not Tom Hanks and Tim Allen back reprising their roles.
I'm 100% positive they sound alike.
The other ones are pretty spot on, and I believe that they are the same actors reprising it. Mr. Potato Head, the dinosaur guy.
Rex,
and,
yeah. Rex is the Rex's voice is pretty obvious.
Like, yeah, he's in a lot of stuff.
The only one that's tough is Slinky. The actor did pass away a couple years ago.
Well, I don't think he spoke in the demo. I believe he was in it. I'll have to double check, but I don't believe he spoke if he was in it. But other than that, the sound-alikes sound great. I don't think a lot of people would realise. But, it was fun. Andy's room looked like Andy's room.
Did it look like Pixar?
Yeah. Ooh. I think the visual fidelity they're getting out of the engine, I believe it's in Unreal 4, it looks better than Toy Story 1.
Mm.
And Toy Story 3 looks still pretty smick. So I would say it's pretty on par. It looks like Toy Story.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's great.
What's next on your list?
Next on my list, Sekiro: Shadows Die Twice.
Yeah, now did you go
or
back?
Sekiro.
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 Yes, this is the latest from Software. This is the Japanese sort of samurai feel. So for me, it felt like From Software's take on Neo, which is Neo's Japanese take on From
Dark
Software.
Souls,
so it's a nice kind of like circle. It was very fast that I found.
Yeah, that was one of my problems with Dark Souls, and it was alleviated a bit in Bloodborne. It was a bit faster. This is fast paced, but you die just as easily.
Yeah, like you get stomped.
It is hard.
But the big thing that they do is, as they mentioned, shadows die twice. So you get the burps and hiccups apparently. You get the ability to resurrect yourself.
Yes, you do.
So you get wrecked, you die, you wait.
You can let the enemy that killed you kind of wander away and then go, I tricked you.
And you come back, go, and you stab him. Yep. And then you die.
And then they turn around
and get you again. Yeah, you only have the ability to resurrect the once, I think. So
I believe so in that demo we played. Unless you get more kills, you can, I think, build it back up.
Oh, nice.
But I don't think
I did not get enough kills to make that worthwhile.
That great at it.
So yeah.
It was hard.
It was very hard. And they have added like a grappling hook sort of system now. Yep. So where you can sort of traverse your way in through trees, through buildings, get a nice sort of sneak attack on people.
Drop down onto other enemies. It's got some pretty cool little mechanics that they've added. The guy has a prosthetic arm and you can swap out.
It's like an axe.
An axe or a fire dispenser or a shuriken thrower and things like that. And It sort of changes up the way you play, because different enemies, there were some that had shields, and you can only get through and damage those if you use the axe ability.
Which is a good way to sort of force you to change up your gameplay style.
Definitely.
Like, even with Bloodborne, you may have the blunderbuss or something like that, but you still have your big fuck-off weapon that you would have, you'd be used to from like your Dark Souls.
It's one of those things, you never feel comfortable in those From Software worlds.
Charge the battery pack. Oh, hang on. Keep talking.
So, yeah, you never feel safe in these worlds at all. You're wandering around and, like I said, there's enemies that have shields and right behind them could be another one that your axe does no damage to and much faster. So you got to watch for their attack patterns and dodge roll out of the way, and then you need to swing around and hit the guy that has the shield behind you, and you can never stop thinking.
Yeah, you got to be on your toes.
Yes.
You can't have a child running around when you're playing. No.
Oh, no.
Playing them FromSoft games. Sorry, it turns out that when I put the camera back up after the weekend of PAX, I forgot to plug it in. So it started yelling at me.
One job. I found there was another thing that I went off to, and I don't believe you went and played, was Devil May Cry.
No, I didn't play Devil May Cry because I've never played Devil May Cry.
This is Devil May Cry 5. It was over at the Xbox booth. Mm-hmm. It was the only thing I played at the Xbox booth all weekend.
I didn't play a thing at the Xbox booth.
So I think that... I don't want to shit on them, but there was only kind of two things worth playing.
We should mention as well that pretty much across the board, there wasn't anything that... There were some cool stuff in there, but you... I really feel that we are, because we are right on that cusp of that generation jump, there's not a lot of new things.
No, they'll have they'll come out of the gate next generation very, very strong.
Yeah, so depending on when PS5's happening, I think next packs might have a lot, mm-hmm. or it may have nothing. So because an example with Xbox, they had a majority of the booth were like, hey, Games Pass,
they were trying to push a lot of their older stuff, which is fine, because opening up Games Pass for a lot of new audiences, is a lot of people may not have played those, so it's a good idea if you got nothing else to show to kind of push your stuff. But yeah, there was two things there that I was interested in. I got to one of them, which was Devil May Cry 5, and the other one was Ori
and the Will of the Wisps.
So didn't get onto that one, so unfortunately can't talk about that, but it looks good. So yeah, I jetted across and checked out Devil May Cry 5, and yeah, if you're a Devil May Cry fan, you're going to love it. This does continue the story as of number 4. If you remember, back in 2013, they tried to reboot it, and now they're rebooting the old.
Yeah.
It didn't work out for them. They jumped back to the old timeline and decided to keep going with that one, so... It's very fast-paced. It's also a game...
Bold move, Cotton. Let's see if it pays out for him.
It's also a game based around prosthetic arms being able to come off and have different abilities. You're playing as Nero again. They did tell me that Dante and one other playable character will be in it, but the build that I played only had Nero playable. But yeah, if you're a fan of Devil May Cry, you're going to love it. It's that fast-paced zaniness. You can pick up and hit people with motorcycles as weapons, so... It's got cool demons, and yeah, if you're a fan, you're gonna love
it. The one thing I remember about Devil May Cry is it did have a lot of that hack and slash that like God of War originally had, Bayonetta had. Is it still the same?
Yep. Very hack.
So if you love that old school Devil May Cry,
very fast paced, building combos. You've got multiple weapons. You've got the gun that can keep your combo going up. It's one of those games where you've got a constant score, and it's scoring you on screen based on how many hits you're chaining between enemies and things like that. You get bonus points and you get a rank at the end of the level.
I want to fix my pants, but yes. Fantastic.
So, yeah, it was fun.
What else we got on that?
We have something that we both got a chance to check out, and also had a really cool booth there, Resident Evil 2.
Man, Resident Evil 2. So thank you very much. We should have just mentioned in advance for our good friend Kat at Capcom and Turn Left for giving us some accommodating appointment time, because that was a very, very in-demand booth.
Yeah,
2 hour plus wait lines. Yep.
Every time I looked over, there was massive lines there. Yeah,
so what's your history with Resident Evil? Did you ever play the original 2?
I played the original on the PS1.
Yeah.
And dabbled in 4. And I also played 6, which I thought was a bit of a joke.
Mm. So I'm in the same...
Like, and I picked up 7.
In a somewhat similar boat, like I never played the original PlayStation ones because I wasn't allowed to. I did play, in my house. Mm-hmm. Number 4 is where I started.
Yep, that was a good place to start.
Which is a great place to start. Number 5, I did play number 5. I thought it was stupid. Never touched 6.
6 was
7,
stupid.
7, we reviewed last year. Thanks once again to Kat and the team. the year before. And I loved number 7. 7 was fantastic. The ending was a little bit weird. But other than that, I thought it was gangbusters. So with Resident Evil 2, it is a full-blown remake of Resident Evil 2.
Yep.
So the way I'm describing it, because it's the easiest way to explain it, it's the polish of 7 with the gameplay and feel of 4.
Yes.
Minus
because,
tank controls.
It's not first person. It's that over the tank, over the shoulder kind of look.
Yeah, when you got the tank zoom 4. In and stuff. Yeah.
Yep. But it has the engine and the polish and the feel of what you got in Resident Evil 7.
Mm.
It was great.
So there are a couple other things. It's bloody.
Very
it's gory,
gory. Very gory.
It's dirty. It's gritty.
Jump
it's
scary.
Gory. Like there is a time where you find a like. So you're in like the demo we played that you're in the police station, and you're going through and you're finding all these dead bodies. And so there's one particular policeman you grab and you look at his head, and as you pull his head back, his
it's
jaw
just falling
just,
apart.
Jaw falls off, but it's still all connected by this meat, and it's glowing red and it's gnarly. And then you turn around as a dude, and then you try to pull a dude through like a sliding door, and he gets his legs ripped out and
yep.
guts and shit everywhere. Fuck, it's awesome.
It was very gory.
Yeah,
I did have one little problem with it. I had to go in and turn the aim sensitivity down because any time the zombies came out, it just felt like I was kind of going all over the place. I don't know if that affected you as well. I could have just been terrible at the aiming, but...
It depends on which... Like, I felt pretty good to me. Like, it did felt... It felt that there was a small... Like, a small... Like room, then like almost like a threshold, right? So you'd go, and then you, once you hit the threshold, it's bam.
Yep.
And then it started flinging across the room. But I was able to sort of feel confident in the movement, but I may have played on the booth that you did.
Possibly.
Because I know that Brendan from 8-Bit, he also had the same issue and he also turned it down on his as well. So.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It's really solid. It's not like, very as keen. I was telling Dylan, it's not the same kind of style where it's the fixed camera angle like it was back on the PS1. You just kind of went around and then it had to load the next room and then it loaded the next room.
So there's no doors. You're not seeing the doors.
No, you're not seeing the doors at all. It's just that over the shoulder camera and you just play.
Yeah. I can't wait, man. Like, it looks really I'm good. Really bad at scary games because I'm a big scaredy cat, but I want it. I need it.
Do you get the spooks in the booth?
I got a little bit of the spooks. So what they did is they set up a hallway that looked all like the police station's covered in blood. And there's a dude dressed up as a zombie cop at the end. And he kind of...
Yeah,
I was hesitant. I'm like, someone's going to fucking jump out at me. I hate this shit. Like, because it was dark and they give you a torch.
They gave you a torch, yeah.
And because so you're doing the whole like torch that shit like Leon does. I'm like, oh, someone's going to jump out at me. And some pulls. So I go to the end and they see the guy and he's like, brr. I'm like, hey, man. He's like, brr, hey.
I was just straight up at the booth. Kat goes to hand me the torch and I'm like, there's a guy in there, isn't he? She's like, yeah.
Oh, man. But yeah, no, RE had a really strong presence in the PlayStation booth, which was awesome.
Yes, yeah.
What else we jump on, sir?
I got Dreams next, but I think we might loop back to Dreams.
We might come back to Dreams, I think.
Also on that day, we did Dash Culture Live.
We did.
At the booth. So that podcast you can go check out. I believe it is live now.
It is. Dash Culture episode 18.
Rage 2. We both checked out.
We did. You checked that before I did, and then I came back a little bit later. So we swang by the AMD booth, which housed our good friend Ethan's very rad Quake glowing symbol.
Incredible.
He built this big open face PC. I think that's what it's called. Open design. I don't give a fuck. And it had a rocket launcher on the top, and it was awesome. And I believe Tim Willits bought it.
Or wants it.
Yeah, so what do you think of Rage?
Loved it. It was one of the highlights of PAX for me.
I agree. It was pretty good.
I kind of wish I did play it before going to speak to Tim about it, but I got a fair amount of Rage-related questions and stuff out of him. But yeah, it's super, super, super tight, super polished, and I liked that the build they had on the show floor was for the show floor. Like, it wasn't just a section of the game that timed you out after 15, 20 minutes or anything like that. It did a good job of kind of teaching you the mechanics that were new and being introduced into Rage 2 and letting you play around with that various weapons in the gun combat. So the build we had didn't have any of the open world stuff or the vehicle car stuff. Yeah. It felt like Doom.
Out of curiosity, for anyone that's interested, it is the E3 build. It did very clearly state that it was the E3 build. The way I see it, when they talk about how it's a mixture between Avalanche and id, I feel they've literally just given the gun mechanics from id, and they're going, here you go.
It has that id feel all over it.
As you're just saying, like, it feels like Doom. Like, it's not quite as chaotic fast as Doom, but the guns have that heavy, that sound. Like, the sound design, it was schmick. Like, he's like, chung, 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 chung. And, like, you can feel that weight of those guns because they are pretty huge guns. I loved it.
Yeah.
I'm keen. So, like, I don't know how it's going to go in terms of the outer world perspective. Having not played Rage 1, I'm not sure whether it's how it's going to tie in or whether I'm going to give a shit.
You might want to check out my interview.
Quite
a bit about Rage 2 and touched on just that stuff, how it links in, what they were able to do in this one that they didn't have the technology to do in the first one, and how this one is a true open world where they were kind of faking it in the last one.
The open worlds.
Yes. So, yeah, that'll be going up soon.
Fantastic.
After Rage... the Pokemans.
Yeah, we'll touch on them a little bit. Being a PlayStation show, you may not give a shit. But, yeah, Pokemon Let's Go Eevee and Let's Go Pikachu.
I liked it.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it quite a bit.
It's 3D, red, blue, 3D and yellow. 3D
Pokemon. It's probably what everyone's Pokemon wanted Go. For a long time. That real next level graphical kind of Pokemon. Pokemon on the TV for one of the first times, unless you're one of the few that had that cable that could link your Game Boy into the Nintendo 64 to link it into your TV. But yeah, one of the highlights of this one is it's Pokemon Yellow again, which was probably one of my favorites, and it's completely all one-handed.
Yeah. So we were using the Pokemon, the Pokeball Plus as well, which has, the design's pretty straightforward. It's got the little nub on the Pokeball is your, damn, it's not in here. My son stole it. I normally have one on the shelf.
It's out there in your kitchen.
Oh, is it really? Thanks. The little nub is like the joystick, and then you've got
press it. You press it
for A, and on the top of the red section, that's your B button. So, what I found impressive, because I was thinking a circular controller, you're automatically going to have it sit in weird ways in your hand. But because you know Pokemon, and when you watch Pokemon, you see how they hold it. You intuitively hold it that way, and then it just fits in your hand.
Yeah, and it feels great.
Your fingers go where they need to. There's a little ring on there, so you put it on, so you don't launch it at your TV. But even that helps keep it in position. It felt incredibly simple.
It's natural.
It felt natural. Yeah. However, one thing that Drew from the House of Mario, a Nintendo podcast on the 8-Bit Collective, mentioned that the game did have the capabilities of a Y button, so you could get more details out of the moves or whatever in the Pokemon battles. However, you can't do that with the controller. So with the Pokemon Plus. Cool. It is a very much a basic Pokemon RPG in that sense.
They're they've been fairly open about trying to target a wide audience. People that are playing Pokemon for the first time, or people that may have only got into Pokemon because of Pokemon Go, they wanted to have something in there that was familiar to them. So the Pokemon catching mechanic is straight out of Pokemon Go.
Yeah, it's literally the green iris circle thing.
You got to throw it at different levels. You can throw it really hard. You can throw it soft. I did miss a couple of times. But your battling mechanic of the other trainers is your traditional Pokemon kind of game, and walking around the city, the grass and stuff feels fine. You do crash into the Pokemon in real space,
which is great. You can avoid the shitty Pokemon you don't want.
It's not randomized in the grass.
I really hope that this is where Pokemon is going. I do think this is an intermediate step. This is them just releasing something,
and
showcasing the 3D potential. So come what we're led to believe would be 2019.
They said that's the next core entry, and they actually specified that. So that by them saying that has made me think that this isn't what they're considering a core entry. It's just a Pokemon game on Switch trying to appeal to everybody.
Exactly. And then come next year, they'll go that deeper dive.
Yep. We also both played Smash, I believe, but we won't really touch on that because I know you've got...
There is a video on the channel about my time with Super Smash.
I'm not much of a Smash fan. I got destroyed, so...
It's chaos. It's still chaos. Even Dylan, who's played it in the past, was like, I don't know what's going on. It's chaos.
Yeah. It was fun, and I can appreciate the people that I was watching play it and things like that, but not really for me. Days Gone.
Yes! Yes! So, when we were given the original press release for what was going to be at PAX Australia, one of the things that was clearly omitted was Days Gone. Now, this release did come 2 days before the announcement of the change of release date. So, I remember going, oh man, that's probably why they've done it. Because with the change of release date, it's bad PR to be like, hey, it's here, whatever. But so when we got there, the media hour, you went, hey, I'm going to go play Kingdom Hearts. Mm-hmm. I'm beelining to PlayStation. I want to see what they have and then jump on. Like my intention being probably head into VR, play Blood and Truth, get the VR on my head before everyone else gets it and gets pink eye. So when I got there, I did the walk of the booth. I'm like, okay, yeah, there's Sekiro, cool. There's Spyro. There's that. Hey, there's Dreams. That's awesome. Hang on. And also, but at the same time, we also didn't get a little bit of a spoiler beforehand.
Yeah.
Nick from PlayStation Australia did post on his Twitter account the hanging bodies that were seen in the
E3. What they ended up calling it, the photo experience.
So we're like, I bet you that's some sort of photo experience. That's not so bad. They're like, you can go and take a photo with some hanging corpses and shit. But no, it turns out it's totally playable. And I do have some initial thoughts that I happened straight after I played it in the channel. What do you think?
I'm still a little bit worried about it. I still had some problems with it, but I know it was an old build.
But 8 months old, they said.
Yep. But I am more positive about it than I was before playing it.
Mm. So like, I was already positive on it for some reason. I don't know why I'm excited for it, but I really am. And then having played it now, I'm like, shit, yeah, I'm even more stoked on it now.
Mm.
Like, I think there are some of the comparisons with The Last of Us 2 are somewhat justified, being that there's, if you break it down a couple of levels, you get the basic, like, you know, they are similar because they're both third person action adventure games
apocalyptic,
set in an apocalypse.
Kind of scavenging your bits, yeah, and bits.
So there are some differences. So there are two modes in the demo. There was the story mode, which was a very small slice of what the final game would be. It's the same gameplay demo shown at E3, if yep. that helps. And it sees you getting off your bike with your buddy. He scoots around to try to bring some dudes out, the freakers, and you have to go in there and
sneak through the city.
Yeah, scavenge some items and then get out. That's the plan. So it shows you how they plan on using stealth and like those baseline systems. It didn't feel like The Last of Us sneaking.
No.
With these freakers not being like clickers that are just brutal if they fuck with you. Well, freakers are. We'll get to that. So you don't have to be as stealthy. You can still go up there and smash them with a bat if you wanted to. And I like that a lot. So like, there is still that need. If you can be as stealthy as you want, you can Assassin's Creed your way through the shit out of that, or you can just go in there and blast everyone's face out.
That's probably not the smartest thing, but
certainly
you can
not the
do
smartest
that.
Thing, but something you can do. And the one thing that caught my attention and almost shocked me a little bit, not in like a how dare they, but in like a oh fuck.
Are we talking the newts?
We're talking newts. So in the game, we have the freakers, and these are all adults. And the reason they're called freakers, I've come to learn, is that it's because they aren't zombies, they aren't zombified. There's still a little bit of cognition.
A little bit switched
in there.
On. And they eat each other.
Yeah, and they're a bit crazier. So zombies, in terms of zombie lore, which is also made up, so who gives a fuck, they don't eat each other.
No.
But these freakers can eat each other. Like, they've known to, like, cannibalize. And they have these things called newts, which are children freakers.
Yeah, I suppose turned infants. Like, or young kids that
yeah
have
young kids that have
into,
turned
yeah
it's really confronting initially because
it
like,
was because I wasn't expecting
I thought
it.
They were just I thought they were just adults that are all small and like crunched and I'm like oh that's a child but there were some things so they don't initially confront you they'll see you and they'll scatter
yeah and I thought that was because right where you start that build there's a couple of them around you and they take off and I'm like oh okay in my head oh those they don't attack you.
Yeah, mind you, if you get too close to them, like a child, they'll attack
you. They attack you.
Yeah, but so it's a cool little touch. So it's not forcing you to beat on children, but I like where they're going. The idea, you know, they aren't. By sounds, but they're not afraid to push what will probably be a hot button topic.
Yeah, and what we've seen in the E3 footage as well. It's not just those humanoid things that are turned or infected, or I don't know what the actual term they're using in the game is, but we've seen the zombie bear and.
Oh, the old zombie, yeah.
Yeah, zombie, and they mentioned something else in one of their footages. They wanted to have things that were fast enough to be able to pull you off your bike and things and traps and stuff around that will get you off your bike because otherwise there's no incentive to get off the bike.
Exactly. Speaking of the bike, the second mode being the horde mode or the swarm mode has you literally like, hey, you're in an area, you are gun to the teeth, you've got everything that you need and there's a bunch of stuff scattered around. Find a way to kill all these freakers.
Pray and spray.
Oh, man. Talk about fucking chaos.
I didn't play this one, so this one's all you.
Yeah, so you're essentially in like what would look like a tip, I suppose. I mean, so you're on the side of a road and it kind of dips in and there's a big crater and they're all in the... There's like what feels like about 100-something.
If it's the same build from E3, they said they rendered 250.
No, this isn't the one with the big warehouse, you know, where you end up climbing up higher. Mm-hmm. It's not the same one.
No. Are you down in like a trench?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, they said there's 250.
Jesus Christ. So there's about 250 zombies in there. And so I kept trying to do a couple of different things. I'm like, all right, well, let's see how I go. I railed some bullets in there. Didn't really do much. And this is something that goes back to what a good friend Buddy, when I joined their episode of Dash Culture a couple of weeks ago, he played this at the...
JB Hi-Fi
the JB
thing.
Hi-Fi
managers
thing out. And he talked about how when you're unloading into that crowd, it feels like you're doing nothing because there's so many of them. And that is certainly the case. Like, it just, so you, I just shot into this giant crowd. Nothing happened. They just went, oh, and they just wrecked me because these guys are fast. And once they get you, there's no like, oh, fight your way out. You just crumble, which is really going to force your hand in how you play. It's forcing you to play smarter. So I was like, okay, cool. Well, I'll set up some traps. I'll run a string of traps and then I'll move away and we'll go from there. So I set up the string of traps, launch them. They come through, clear out the trap, probably take out what feels like about 50 or something. Swarmed. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah.
All right, let's try that again. So I redid the traps, but in a different route and in a way that kept me safe to get me to my bike. But only with only a handful of explosives, I was like, all right, cool. Throw some like explosives. Sorry, like Mike Molotovs and stuff to sort of get that damage done. Back away, they get into the traps, I can get on the bike and scoot. Got some more dudes down that time, got to the bike, swarmed, dead.
Wow.
Because I didn't move the bike. I kept it in the original spot. So I got it and then I had to go backwards and then scoot. I'm like, all right, I'll try again. So I lined it up. So I moved the bike preemptively, got it to a place where I can just jump on and scoot, and then did the same path again. Got out, got around, was able to, so they had them chasing me, trying to shoot at them, kept missing, so I did a 180 to try to get back into the crowd. I thought maybe I could just peg it through them and just shoot my way out. It was like hitting a brick wall. It was like, badoosh, and then I just got wrecked, and then I ran out of time. So like, I even that part of the game has me excited, because there's this, one, like, I'm really good at playing. When I play a game, I have an idea in mind. I'm like, I'm gonna run through this, I'm gonna get to this point, and then that's how I think the path is going to go. And then the game will throw a spanner or I'll die, and I'm like, well,
and you need
I'm
on a, the fly trying to yeah, figure I'll go, out how well, you're gonna get out
I'll
of that
do
shit.
That path again, because my brain's like, well, that seemed to work last time, I'll try it again. And then, you know, but there's no like, you do get punished for doing the same path, but in here I feel that you go, oh that's not gonna work. Like, I can't even squeeze that same path again because I'm like, that didn't work at all.
Mm. So that was one of my problems. I think I did mention it to you about Days Gone. One of my initial worries is that when we first saw it at E3 2016, I think it was a similar kind of scenario where it was mowing down freakers like they were nothing. And that was, it kind of gave the game that kind of arcadey feel. You didn't really have to be worried about the freakers as creatures. If you would want to make that comparison again to The Last of Us, I thought that was super freaky when there was just two or three clickers in the room,
yeah,
and how to navigate in between that, and you initially kind of didn't want to alert them because it was almost instant death. It seems in this, though, that that horde mode is kind of telling you what will happen if you don't do that.
Yeah, if you're playing the single player stuff, yeah, but the story stuff.
And you
manage
to screw something up, or you make too much noise, you're going to have to deal with that horde.
I think I agree with where you're heading there. But one of the things here is, I think it's the knowing that you can unload into them. Like, you do feel a bit powerful when you're sort of just mowing, shooting at them. But the second you reload and you have that 4 seconds of vulnerability, I'm like, oh, shit. Like, you can't stand still. You have to keep moving. And that's what I got out of this. I'm like knowing that you feel powerless, maybe like a little too powerless, because you don't really see the bodies drop either. But it is in... Oh, my friend's gone bonkers right now. What's going on over there? Yes. So, yeah. So, you feel less powerful because you're not seeing the bodies drop, but you do get that sense of dread, that sense of overwhelming.
Yeah. That's what I wanted out of a game with that kind of tone and setting. So, I'm glad that after... And that's part of the reason you go hands-on with these things, is because, like I said, after going hands-on, I understand more about the game and I am more excited for it.
Okay, it's Dash saying that I should go play Blackout. He says hurry up, Viva La Dill and Haggard MC, which is me, give Daddy what he wants. He wants to play more Call of Duty. It's like a drug.
He's addicted.
He is, a little bit.
After that, if we're not going to discuss any indies, which maybe we'll save for another. Yeah.
Well, I did also spend some time with Spyro. Not a lot, probably a couple of minutes during that media hour, because
it probably was the best time for you to jump on Spyro, because I couldn't believe the line there.
Huge. Man, it was massive.
Spyro.
Yeah. Massive.
I thought that line was to get into the dreams experience. No, yeah, and then you're like, no, that's Spyro. I'm like, no, it's not. And it was for Spyro.
Because I'm probably going to play it, but although I'm not the right audience for Spyro, I didn't have that strong connection with it. Like, I played it when I was younger, and I was like, oh, yeah. Like, it handled like shit back then. It handles better, so that's a big thumbs up. It looks amazing.
But it still had to take that PS1 level design and build, and that's why it still feels dated from what I'm hearing from people. I haven't gone hands-on with it myself, and I, like you, wasn't a Spyro person. My PS1 mascot was Crash Bandicoot, not Spyro.
And the big difference with that, 2D platformers can hold up longer than 3D platformers.
Yeah.
Because like if it's got poor sort of 3D systems, they're just going to still be there, but prettier.
Mm-hmm. Yep. A lot of people are saying bring back Croc. You don't want Croc.
You don't want Croc.
It's terrible.
You try. I've got Croc on the shelf here. I tried to play it recently, and it's balls, yeah. Man. It is major balls.
Yeah, you don't want it. So, yeah, the only other big thing that we're going to loop back to is we both got a good chat and time with and seen what Dreams is finally about.
Yeah, so Media Molecule was there. They had one of the Australian-based devs, Daniel Kidney. Mm-hmm. Now, I do apologize to Daniel once again. I forgot his name twice.
During the interview.
Not during the interview, like before it. I'm like, yeah. Because like my brain was kicking through questions. I'm like, okay. These are the questions that I want to ask. I'm like, yeah, cool. What was your name again? And I was like, hey, Daniel, Ryan, cool, thanks. My brain's like, yeah, cool question, good questions. Brandon? Was it Brandon? Can't be Brandon. What was your name again? Sorry, dude.
No, it was not. It's just you. I was like, oh, it's Max.
It was Daniel.
It wasn't Max.
I'm like, all right, cool. Sit down. Get the camera ready. All right, get the camera ready. Blah, blah, blah. All right, and fuck, what's your name again? He's like, Daniel.
He's a nice dude, though.
Daniel Kidney. And I'm like, Kidney? I'm like, really? He's like, yeah. And I thought he was being a smart ass because I was accidentally being a dick. And I'm like, oh, cool. No worries, man. And he's like, yeah, it's all right, Bruce. I'm like,
Bruce.
Thanks, man. But no, he was lovely. So he was running sessions throughout the day showing off the level design system in games. And when I say the level design system.
In Dreams.
Because this is the thing that I had to come to terms with Dreams. I have spent the last however long, for any of the, you know, the long-term watchers of the show, going, I don't know what Dreams is. I don't know what this game is supposed to be and why I should care about it. The answer is, it isn't a game. It's a game building system in the shape of a game.
Well, it is a game, but it's more than a game is what I'd say.
That's the way I understand it. I'm like, it's not a game. Okay, yeah. I get it. Like they have, and then one of the questions that we did ask Dan, almost forgot his name again. One of the things we did ask Daniel was, you know, like that identification, like it's kind of a game, but it isn't. He's like, yeah, like we're marketing it as a game because it's much simpler to explain than it's a game because we can't be like, here's a bunch of tools, blah, blah, blah. That sounds really boring. Like there is still a game in there,
but there is what a campaign, you, what you a single can player. Do
is huge,
massive. They've chose a fitting name for it because it essentially is, if you can dream it, you can make it, with only very small things that they said that their tool can't do.
Yeah, so one of the things they mentioned, and this was also in the Game Informer article, that you could make almost anything that you want in here outside of an MMO, and not because it doesn't support it, because it doesn't have that online infrastructure.
Yet. You said that the networking will be coming, so hell, online games could be coming to Dreams.
Yeah, so... What's truly impressive about this for me is there's so many different components in the game designing tool. Like you have the ability to use pre-rendered assets to help build your level. It's almost like Unreal is probably the easiest way to explain it.
Yes.
Anyone familiar
with the game engine will know the kind of like your staple things from game design. It's all in kind of one package.
Yeah, and then you can sort of like sculpt creations. You can then build a level and then build a track. You can then make that character animate. Mm-hmm. You can then animate the levels. You can then put sound in there. You can make your own sound. So either you import pre-recorded loops and MIDIs,
yep.
Or you can get the ones that are already there and then
tweak them.
And then not just put it in and go, that's fine. You then click on it, breaks it down. Click on it, break it down again. Click on it, break it down again.
Yeah.
So you can go about four layers deep and you can change pitch, tone, tempo. You can cut some out. You can put it in here. You can literally, it's almost like a very... And almost like a simplified garage band.
Yeah, you got all the tools in there to make it your own. So,
and it's insane. Like the fact that you can go from like what would be incredibly simple, which is something that I'm going to make because I'm not very artistic, to something super deep and dense, baffles me. And the fact that it all worked. We did other things. The video may be up when this goes. If not, it'll be up very shortly. Because one of the things we talked about was, how does the game know to all this? How does it separate this? Like, what prevents it from like overloading and, you know, not being optimized? Because one of the big things that you can make a game do whatever you like. If you know how to use a game creation tool, you can make it do whatever you want.
Yeah,
but
whether
you can render that or make it optimized is a big thing.
And especially only because the reason I brought that up when we were discussing with him is, if anyone is familiar with Media Molecule's other stuff, the closest thing you can relate to is Little Big Planet, which also had the creative tools, and that had a limited number of assets and things you could put in your scenes, whereas this doesn't have that.
Yeah, so they are bringing in the same motto as Play, Create, Share from Little Big Planet. Sorry. But they have been able to sort of expand on it a lot.
A lot.
Well, the thing that's really impressed me, like on top of all of everything that's already impressed me, is they had these couple of booths that were showing a bunch of the mini games. There was one where you're two little hammers, and you kind of create a small little soccer game with balloons, and then there's like a, you know, just as you hammer the floor, it falls apart like puzzle pieces. It's very, very cool. Then you go to like this nice 2D cartoony sort of story. You just kind of go from left to right and jump and stuff. And they've got this really artsy thing called Hug Me. And the idea is you're this little creature, and as you walk around, you've got your arms out, and everything steps away, and everything falls off this floating platform, and it doesn't end until you fall off that platform. You jump off that platform, and that is like kind of powerful and kind of amazing.
Yeah.
And then after that, I was like, man, that was really kind of, oh, that was kind of bittersweet. That was kind of, ooh. Like, it's, you know, that's art. You interpret a little bit. Mm. And then the next one's like straight up Resogun.
Yeah.
Like, it's that nice 2D shooting. Like, you know, like it's very much like, not like Galaga, because that was kind of a bit different, but it's that old school shooting, like 2D Starship. I'm like, it's baffling.
It's so baffling
that it is this flexible. What you can make
is incredible.
And it's all running on the same game or the same engine, I suppose.
Yep. Same rendering tools. And like you touched on earlier, I think one of its strengths is how accessible it's going to be for people as well. If you want to get in there and do the deep level tweaking and stuff and throw tons of stuff in your levels and have these really deep stories or really artsy things, you have that ability. If you want to go in there and just pull assets, prefabs that people have made and things like that, use a character that someone else has made, and you can just use that and throw it in your scene.
Because that's the other thing they talked about, was the power of that community, as in, you may not be really good at character design, but you can know how to nail audio.
Yeah.
So you can have people that come to you and go, hey, I can see you've got X amount of XP or X amount of points as an audio designer. Yeah, there'll be a
massive collaboration between people. Yeah, I'm trying to do
this and this. Any chance you can help me out? And whether there be some sort of in-game incentive or dollar incentive, I'm not sure how it's going to work. But then you can go, all right, cool, give me what you need, there you go. And then, hey, but can you help me do this? Because I'm really bad at level design. Like, all right, cool. And like, there's this big collaborative effort. Now, they did also mention that there is a beta coming towards the end of this year. And I did ask the question, I'm like, hey, Media Molecule has promised betas.
Yeah, there was a beta last year and a one the year before that never happened. But they seem pretty confident.
But some of the things that, this is something that I liked when I heard it. He said to me, as a company, we won't push it or get it out there until it's ready. And I think that from once again, now playing it and seeing what it is, I'm like, all right, PlayStation believe in that and they understand that. Because like, we've always wondered, like, is Media Molecule like fucked if this goes bad? Mm. Still potentially the case. But I can see why they're supporting this. I can see why they're willing to throw the money and invest it, because the potential of this could be amazing. Wouldn't it be? It's very unlikely because I'm not sure how powerful the engine is. But wouldn't it be baffling if the Dreams comes to a point that it becomes this like the same quality engine like Decima?
Mm. like not in visual fidelity, but in terms of what it can do and flexibility or things like that.
Like imagine if every PlayStation exclusive is built in Dreams.
Is built in Dreams. Yeah.
It's not possible. But wouldn't that be amazing?
But it could.
Or who knows? Because so PlayStation has this thing called PlayStation First, and they've been using it here in Australia for a while, where what they do is they essentially provide dev kits to university students, almost like a scholarship, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be amazing? They're like, hey, we can offer you a dev kit, and we can offer you the full-blown Dreams, and people make games in
like
Dreams.
Like starting to sponsor school kids or school programs or game design programs where rather than teaching the kids Unity or things like that, the first step in is Dreams. Just to teach them that fundamental.
Then they learn Dreams and then you know they may realize
where they can focus on design rather than code.
Yeah, and then they can realize the potential constraints of Dreams. I imagine there will be some restrictions and they go, oh, now I want to go use Unity. Like this is an amazing gateway way to become creative with games.
And anyone can do it. Like he was saying there that their website developer or someone that works in sound audio or something like that was making this super artistic game that everyone in the office loved, and he doesn't have the skills to make a game on his own, but he could do it in Dreams.
And that's another thing that really caught my interest, because I asked the question like, can you make a campaign? Can you make your own big fledged
and the answers
game?
To all pretty much everything was
the answer
yes.
was yes. And the one they talked about was, you know, you could make your weird quirky ideas. You can make a love letter to someone. You can make all these things. And as I'm getting older and more softer and shit, being married and kids and stuff, and I am finding myself being more emotionally moved by art. And I was like, man, that's amazing. You can tell some incredible stories.
Definitely. Yeah, even short films.
Even short
films. The amount of people that are going to be like seen in credits maybe in the future, we might be seeing Made in Dreams or.
Yeah, wouldn't that be amazing?
That would be pretty cool. And they seem to have a lot on the plans post-release too. I can't remember what was said off the record, so I won't mention nothing. But they seem to have a lot of things in the works and planned for Dreams post-release. And that it's always a live thing and can be ever-changing based on player feedback.
Yeah,
what tools are being used, what aren't being used, how to better make it for the community and things like that. It's going to be a thing. So like you were mentioning before, it's going to have legs after the thing. So if it launches and it's not perfect, even though they said they're not going to launch it until they're 100% happy with it, it still has the ability to be fixed.
And what I love about the idea that, back to the beta that we approached and mentioned earlier, is that everything that's created in the beta will move through to the full game. I think the exact words were, we will never delete anything. Well, I imagine if it breaks copyright or something, they'll delete it. But I mean, like they don't want to go, you put all this hard work in this beta period, scrapped, do it again. Like they don't want to hamper creativity. They want to support creativity. And this seems like an incredible platform to do that.
After seeing it and seeing it firsthand, I can see why Sony hasn't given up on it. It makes sense.
It's very, very cool. But that brings us to everything that we've played. So let's just wrap this up. So what is your gamer show for PAX?
In terms of probably overall polish and feel, I'd probably have to give it to Rage, I think.
Yeah.
Rage 2.
Rage did feel really, really good. But like I was sort of open to the idea of Rage anyway. In terms of what I would call game of show, as in like Dreams is the biggest surprise for me.
I've been a long-time supporter of Dreams and watched a fair few of their streams that he mentioned, so I've kind of been on board the whole time, but I know a lot of people in our circle weren't, so I'm glad to see a lot more people getting it.
Yeah, because like I've been poo-pooing it this whole time. So in terms of what's great is me having that turnaround. I love that I've had that turnaround. So I'm like, yeah. Like it's, you know, people get really stern and stiff in their positions. I'm like, no, change my mind. And it did. It changed my mind.
And you might not be wanting to get it and spend all that time and effort making the game, but you can still play and appreciate things other people make as well. Which is another reason just to pick it up.
I don't know. Like I liked RE a lot. I'm very keen to check out RE. Days Gone, I was already keen on, but having now played it, it makes sense. I'm still keen. Certainly wasn't Smash. Certainly wasn't Nintendo at all, really.
No, I was expecting them to be solid and good, and they were.
To me, it's probably a toss-up between Resident Evil and Days Gone. They're probably my two. Like, Rage is cool and all, but I want to see the full game. I need to see the exploration and stuff to make that go down. Yeah. I'd say it's a toss-up between Resident Evil and Days Gone.
Cool.
Very nice. So, were you at PAX Australia 2018? Did you happen to get hands-on with any of the games we mentioned? Or some that we didn't mention that we probably should have checked out? Because, as I mentioned, we didn't touch any of the indies. So, jump in those comments below. Let us know what your thoughts on the games that we've played and the games that we should have played. Now, this brings us into the next section, because these games... So they're available soon. Some of them don't have a release date. Like Dreams, still no release date. It's far
away.
That's
fine. But what can I play like this week?
But this week you can play the games that we are reading off the drop, which is in a section we call Coming to the Players. So these are all the games that will be out for the week ending. For October 30th.
Yeah. This week.
Now, once again, as always, disclaimer, this is for the US blog. Sorry, thank you for the US PlayStation Store. So, who knows whether all these will make it to the Australian store. Kicking things off is Call of Cthulhu, PS4 Digital. Chronos Ark, PS4 Digital, PS Vita Retail Crossbuy.
Let's see if that actually hits Vita.
Yep. Deathmark, PS4 and PS Vita, digital out on the 31st. Dream Daddy Dad Rector's Cut, PS4 digital. You and your daughter have just moved into the sleepy seaside town of Maple Bay, only to discover that everyone in your neighborhood is single, dateable. Dateable dad. You will go out with teacher dad, goth dad, or any of the other cool dads. I wanted to play the shit out of this when it came out on Steam, because it just seemed... so like interesting. It just said I've never seen anything like it, and for that
it's
reason
pretty zany, but it's been reviewed for quite well, and
yeah, it's been really well loved on the PCs.
If you're wanting to get into it or know more, I believe Denny O'Dwyer Noclip did a thing on it. It wasn't Denny, it was his side team, and I think Alana might have picked it up, but yeah, there's more info about it out there.
Infinite Adventures, PS4 digital. Legends of Catalonia, The Land of Barcelona, PS4 digital.
PSVR.
PSVR, my apologies. Necropara Volume 1, PS4 digital, out on the 2nd of November. Paper Dolls, PSVR. The Quiet Man, PS4 digital, out on the 1st of November. Unraveling within a single night, players take the role of a deaf protagonist, Dane, as he fights his way through a, quote, soundless world to discover the motives behind the kidnapping of a songstress from a mysterious masked man. This was a sneaky one that was in the Square E3 presentation. Yep. I think it was a live-action trailer.
It was initially, yep.
Yeah. I had no idea what this game was about, and I thought this game was coming out next year.
No, it's not only a quiet man, it's kind of quiet under the radar release.
Quiet release.
So, Square Enix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it could be interesting. It's a lot of, everyone was joking, it's kind of like Daredevil, the game, by the looks of it.
It'd be pretty cool. I mean, I'll look into it some more, and maybe I'll jump on it. Redeemer Enhanced Edition, PS4 Digital, and I believe that Redeemer is already out, and it's not available in Brazil, according to the drop. Revenge of the Bird King, PSVR digital, out the 2nd of November. Shadow of Loot Box, PS4 digital, out on the 2nd of November. Super Pixel Races, PS4 digital, out on the 31st. Super Volley Blast, PS4 digital, out on the 1st of November. Taiko no Tatsujin. Can you do it? You're better at Japanese.
Taiko no Tatsujin.
Drum Session. PS4 Digital, out 11th of the 2nd. 2nd of November. It's finally here.
Yeah, not reading it.
Can you read? No, just read that.
Taiko no Tatsujin.
For the PS4. Over 70 songs featuring the favorites and brand new ones. All the best songs from the arcade in your home. New for PS4, friend session, guest session, ranked match, and more. So this is like essentially one of those like arcade games with the drums and the little sticks and stuff.
Yep.
I have no idea about this game, nor do I care about it.
No idea how it's working on the PS4. I know it had a big Nintendo presence because it works with the Joy-Cons, and there is a physical drum with some of the additions, but I believe that's sold out. I'm not sure how it's working with the PS4. whether or not it uses move controllers or what. But.
Unsure. I have known nothing about this game, although it has been brought to my attention. One of our friends on Instagram and Twitter, Two Busy Gamers, he is a big advocate of the game, and he looks really excited for it. So that's why it's on my radar. But the only thing that catches my interest this week is Dad. The old Daddy Dating Simulator.
I'm a bit interested in Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah. But this week for me will be Red Dead. This is me catching up on Red Dead, jumping on Paw Patrol with my boy. Outside of that, it's pretty low-key gaming week, I think.
I'm going to be busy writing up my previews and everything I wrote from PAX for any game.
Yeah, I do have to edit all those videos. I'm kind of delaying it because I'm really lazy.
You get a few days.
Yeah, I got a few
days. Got to get over PAX box.
Yeah, they will come out during this week, but give me a break, man. But anyways, thank you so much, Joel, for joining me on this week's episode of For the Players.
No problems.
Pop Culture's PlayStation Podcast. We do have to make sure we mention the full name, otherwise it's straight up copyright infringement, which it already is. So, but yeah, no, thank you so much. So for those that, once again, where can they find you on the socials and all that sort of stuff?
Pretty much on the socials, mainly on Twitter. So if you want to follow any game, which is what I mainly do a lot of my chats through, whether it be me, these are just me, but a lot of the time I just use the any game account. It's anygame_AU, or you can follow me at Joel Gralton. Nice. Or come check out the website, anygame.com.
Yeah. Oh, I should mention, I'm trying to do a lot more on Twitter as of recent. So feel free to follow me at HaggardMC. That's HaggardMC. I do a bunch of dumb stuff on there.
Yeah.
I save most pictures of my son.
Pictures of son. James did this today.
Yeah.
He's haunted. He's
James came into my room talking about ghosts, and it was dark and it was scary. I was trying to go to the bathroom. He kicked the door in like a Jurassic Park Velociraptor. You know, there's all these different things that he does. It's I'm trying to use Twitter as it was intended, random ass thoughts in your brain just on the internet.
Just word vomit.
Yeah. And we also share a lot of PlayStation news and stuff as it happens. But if you enjoy that PlayStation conversation, that happened every Monday morning at 9 a.m. on the YouTubes and 8 a.m. on the podcast services. If you want to further that conversation, head to the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/popcultures, where myself, Joel, and a bunch of other like-minded PlayStation enthusiasts chat about the gaming space and pop culture space, really.
Anything that's interesting.
We talk about wrestling a lot, actually. We talk about WWE Evolution, the all-female pay-per-view. She'll go back and finish. Remember watching later. What else is there? Oh, yeah. We can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/popculturists. You might find a tier that interests you, which one of the things is being able to watch us record this show live when it isn't being done on a Monday evening. And, of course, you can show your love for culturists on your body at popculturists.com/shop. You can buy shirts and phone cases and books and pillowcases and a bunch of different things with our logos smacked on it, excluding the Fallout 1, thanks to
which is not available anymore.
I was really excited. I was really stoked on that design, and now it's no longer there. Oh, DMCA, you fair bastard. And we are on Twitch, twitch.tv/popculturists. As I mentioned, we'll be streaming Paw Patrol and maybe some Red Dead in the future. We'll see how we go.
Probably likely.
But until then, I am Ryan Betson.
I'm Joel Gralton.
And that was For the Players.